as I've been an assessor or been involved in the office, and it's been 22 years, I like the April 1 date because it is there. But I do think that an extension beyond that for special circumstances is reasonable.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Cohen here. Senator Cohen?
No, I just came to listen, and I have an interest in what you're doing.
Any suggestions?
You've been a long time. Do something.
Do something. All right.
Do it right.
Right.
Question for that. This, the notice date of April 1, you showed me a list earlier. All the property tax laws we have, April 1 or some of the data is being with this date. If we start messing around with this one, what are we doing?
Actually, we'll be talking about 98 in a minute. That's the other bill that's before us. And one of the series of amendments, the Dash 7 amendments to that, actually say, okay, that the April 1 date stays. But in addition to that, we're going to allow, if the acquisition of the property occurs after March 1st, I think it is, in that period prior to June 30th, but after the April 1 date, then you get 30 days after the acquisition. So in that sense, it leaves the April 1 date in place, but it adds flexibility that is not there in the existing law for those properties that are acquired in that period between the application date and the end of the fiscal year when they are taxable or exempt, whatever the situation is.
Do we need to hear from Karen at this point?
Is that
a separate issue?
Well, I think Karen wants the 98. It can sort of be looked at as the department's bill where they deal with a lot of issues that are administrative. And so she wants to come before us and tell us why they need that bill particularly. I mean, that's the one that deals with ports, it deals with cemeteries, deals with there's not an issue involved.
But it doesn't really relate to this application date particularly, does it? Is it involved?
Well, definitely, yeah. Application dates are aspect in the bill. The Dash 7 amendments in particular are involved with the application date.
Gibson Hugo, would you like to hear that too at the same time?
Yeah, I've got a problem. As I mentioned, I've got to go upstairs about 3:45. That should take about 10 or 15 minutes. I wonder, we have the three bills, and Dick, you have the opinion that saying that we can't pull all three issues into one.
You mean you think we need two?
That's what I think we need, is two bills.
And 579 stands alone then?
I have already taken 674 and pulled that into 98.
Okay. I wonder if we could work on 579.
Okay, let's go ahead.
See if we can get something on that. We can't take action. What do you recommend the full committee?
Yeah, but we can ask for some amendments to be drawn to recommend the full committee if we want to do that.
Well, I have some empathy for the thought that Vic was just talking about, which would be that if an exempt property changes hands prior to April 1, that exempt property, and it would remain exempt if an application had been timely made, that the new owners of that property would have until June 1 or something, whatever date you want to pick. So there's there's some flexibility in April 1 that we keep the April 1. I think Kim makes a good point. Mostly filing dates are April 1st. If we hang on to that date and just provide for those circumstances where property is changing hands, maybe a June 1 date to make application for continuation of exempt status.
Kim, if you got to talk, better come back up.
If that's your intent, I think in order to cover all of the properties that might close by sometime up to and including June 30th, you're going to have to give them 30 days from whatever the act is that makes that happen.
Kim, don't we have 20. In statute in some place now, and I've forgotten what section it falls into, but when you have a transfer, in some cases, they can make application within 30 days of the date of transfer up until the...
Representative Traherne, we used to have that on farm use. Okay. We had 20 days or something. I think that's gone now because transfer doesn't disqualify anymore. But there are some statutes that either do or have had an extension beyond the Act that would allow so many days after whatever Act took place to apply for a special assessment or exemption. It just has never been applied to exempt organizations under these categories.
In that case, we could keep the April 1st date but ignore it, because what you're saying is you have 30 days or 20 days from date of transfer of property.
Representative Hugo, if the property had been owned on January 1 by the exempt organization, the April 1 date would apply and would be binding.
Okay. If you purchased the property after January 1, like say you bought it in the middle of February,
right,
the April 1 date would still be there, or right, 30 days after
transaction? Okay, this would be, I guess, a gray area, but the April 1 date would be there, and if they met it, that's fine. Otherwise, their qualifying deal would be, if you go with this concept, would be so many days after the day they bought it or the day it became exempt. There can be a case where an ownership can be taxable, and then by virtue of some act that they do, it can become exempt without even a change of ownership. Mm-hmm. They may make it a qualifying organization or a qualifying use. And so I would guess that the act that makes it a qualifying use would trigger it. The value notice indicating that they are no longer exempt or that they are going to be taxed would trigger it. The notice that it is going to be taxable, a statement from the assessor is going to be taxable, would trigger it. Or in the final case, the last possible would be the tax statement itself, if that's the first notice. And I think if you just said the first notice of taxability or April 1.
30 days from first notice of taxability.
I think 30 days is probably a reasonable period. That would give them up until the end of July to apply, which is kind of pushy as far as us getting it processed. But
it could also be the end of the middle of November.
Yes.
If the first notice is a tax statement.
Right. If the tax statements go out on October 20th or 25th, they would have 20 days or 30 days from that date, right? But by that time, the tax roll has already been processed.
Yeah.
It's not going to make any difference when we process it then.
Well, the charge suggests we pursue that. The April 1 date still stands. If there's a transfer or if there's something that causes a change in the tax status of the property, we have 30 days from their first notice for this assessment, notice of exemption, repeal, or tax statement.
Or purchase. Yeah.
Is that too broad to write? I don't think so.
Or their act to make it exempt. You know, that could also be a triggering mechanism. If they're willing to come in and say, all right, we're exempt on May 1 and apply by June 1 or May 30, that also would qualify. Any act that may
alter the tax status of the property.
We could handle it.
You're talking about all exemptions, you're talking about religious exemptions, you're talking about...
I need to go all of them, you can. How can we treat one tax-exempt status from another tax-exempt status?
We've pretty well got the same April 1st date in all of those.
True.
I think... I don't know how much research is going to be to chase through how many different options there are there.
Well, all of the application days fall under the 307...
162.
That's the application for all three of those major ones, paternal, religious, charitable. And if there were just a clause added on to 162, I think it would handle all of these instances.
That would be the best way to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to go upstairs.
Yeah, the other question that we need to address, and are you interested in going retroactive?
Not too. Okay. But I guess on the whole committee, we should have it done as retroactive. So
Bill,
so
do it in the direction.
Let the committee determine that.
Okay.
Like our problem was the notice date. Okay. I think we just done that.
So what you're saying essentially is to pull the Section 2 out of this bill incorporated into 98 and leave Section 3 as a separate.
Yeah, then let the whole committee deal with retroactive in this particular case. That's not a question of policy as far as state law. That's a question of equity. I have radio empathy for it, but it'll be this for us. I'll be right. I'll be next.
The other issue is Senate Bill 98, and I think that's going to take a little time.
Okay.
Perhaps we ought to are you going to be very quickly, or should we reschedule?
Minutes.
Okay, let's just recess for 10.
Okay.
Stand at recess. Thank you, Kim.
I spent a lot of time with the full committee going through it.
I don't know, you know, roughly, let me just sort of summarize where we are, that we have a bill that deals with three major areas. Cemeteries is one area, and we're dealing there with just sort of moving things around, taking some tax law out of Chapter 91 and moving it into Chapter 307 and that sort of thing. And requiring in some of those sections that they do make application according to 307.162, that's trying to get everything to sort of run through that section and so that the dates are uniform and that sort of thing. The second area it deals with is daycare centers. We do have an amendment here before us, the Dash 1 amendments, which also deal with daycare centers, and Don Marges is here, would like to speak with respect to that. The third issue that's involved in these amendments is the ports, and there we're dealing with the in-lieu tax and the notification requirements by the ports, both to the assessor and to the lessee, and then a one-shot notice that has to go out to everyone who's currently involved in leasing from the ports and these dock properties. I also, right behind the Dash 7 amendments, there's sort of one of the main issues that we do have involved here is these dates, and I've tried to draw together what's involved here, all of the sections out of 307 that do involve property tax exemptions. And as you can see, most of the, I've sorted these by what the dates are that in fact apply. At the top are the ones that don't have a date, they're just exempt, like U.S. property. The Section 120 dock, port and dock commission property, there's no date on that, but the in-lieu tax, and that's really different than these other things. The date there is December 31st, again, within 30 days, and that is dealt with in the Senate Bill 98 that we're dealing with right now. We come down and water associations and telephone companies, there we're dealing with in-lieu taxes, really. They pay a gross receipts tax, which is in lieu of the property tax, and so they have to go through kind of their own procedures there. And then after that, we're primarily dealing in all cases with the April 1 deadline. Some of these are through 307.162, which says April 1st or within 30 days of the acquisition of the property if it's acquired in that window between March 20th and June 30th. Then you can see some of the statements there, like come down at 112, leased by a public body, it says April 1, subject to A, and A at the bottom says, again, after March 20th, but not later than June 30th, the claim shall be filed within 30 days after the date of acquisition of property. And it says the same thing in B there in 311.410. We're amending it, in fact, in Senate Bill 98 to say that same thing. The last one there is the exception. That says 3-1, and you might wonder about that. And what that is a situation where in order to qualify for the exemption, they have to get the agreement of the local community, city or county, which is the administering board. And so the appeal deadline there is to the board, and that then gives the board time to notify the county assessor by April 1.
Does the board have 30 days?
Yes.
So it reaches the assessor at the same date that way.
Yes. Right. Okay. So while it appears inconsistent, it is consistent.
Okay.
So what we have then is the department can come basically forward and talk about Senate Bill 98, which is at the request of the department. They also wish to talk about the Dash 5 amendments, which have to do with the definition of land. And then...
Are the Dash 5 their amendments?
Yes. And then we have the Dash 7 amendments, which are Barbara Seymour's, really, and I can talk about those later. And the Dash 1 amendments, I think, again, they deal with child daycare center, and Don Marges.
Okay. Let's start with the department. Karen?
Chairperson Trahearn, Representative Hugo, I'm Karen Stifler from the Department of Revenue, Assessment and Appraisal Division. Senate Bill 98A is department-sponsored legislation, as Mr. Yates pointed out, And it's designated to clean up as a housekeeping matter some problems that have come to our attention, specifically within property tax exemption statutes. Sections 1 through 5 deal with cemetery and crematory exemptions. And at the direction of the Senate Revenue Committee, all cemetery and crematory property tax exemptions will now be folded into Chapter 307. These amendments provide for property tax exemption for cemetery and crematory property of religious institutions. And the amendments also provide for exemption of all cemetery and crematory property that's held or used solely for those purposes. The original intent was not to include for-profit cemeteries. However, the Senate Revenue Committee felt that it was proper to treat all cemetery crematory properties similarly and to exempt them consistently.
The for-profit cemeteries are not presently exempt, is that correct?
Correct. Bye. Also, it provides for exemption of family burial grounds, which is not currently provided for. The amendments provide for exemption for buildings used to store machinery and equipment that's used exclusively for the maintenance of burial grounds. And also, the amendments provide for a penalty when property is changed from the cemetery to a taxable use. For example, if sod were to be sold off, that would trigger a penalty. Current law doesn't provide for that, so this is cleaning up that. The current law provides for a penalty when property sells to a taxable person.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hugo.
Well, as far as the cleaning up of the statute moving here in 307, I can understand that. But deleting from the tax roll all for-profit cemetery and crematoria, that seems to be more of a policy question than just a housekeeping issue. So that was done by the Senate Revenue Committee?
Chairperson Traher and Representative Hugo, correct.
How much value are we talking about in for-profit cemeteries that are currently taxed that under this law would not be taxed? Any idea?
I do not have that estimate. Perhaps legislative revenue does.
I'm just wondering what the value of a 500-acre parcel of land adjoining U.S. Highway 26 in Beaverton would be if it were taken off the tax rolls.
Well, it is, first of all, a little bit difficult. You have to sort of commit the property to that use before it would be taxable, and it is rather difficult. There was a case, of course, in the Clackamas, Washington County, one of those counties, where there was an attempt to take property out of that committed use, and you know, that was an unusual thing, and it was a rather public eye catcher.
And that was Finley's, and they wanted to build condominiums,
yes,
or apartments?
Yes, yes. But it is that unusual. The department did do a survey. Jim Kenney, who's not here, I guess, did survey counties to find out who was taxing privately owned cemetery or burial plots and who was not. Most counties were not. I think he said there were five or six where some of those properties were on the roll. But I think in general, it's one of those situations where it's not consistent across the state. Some counties are taxed, some counties are not, and I don't think there's a lot of property that's on the roll at this time.
Be a lovely view from your apartment, wouldn't it? Okay.
Karen, you're talking about a penalty if they change the use of the land. I guess that's basically what we're saying on these.
That is correct.
How would that penalty be computed?
That appears in Section 4, and it's back taxes equal to 10 times or such lesser number of times corresponding to the years after 1981 of the exemption for the land, the total amount by which taxes would have been assessed against the land if it had not been exempt during that last year after 1981, which the land was exempt from taxation. This is currently in the statute. The part that's being changed is dealing with a change of use rather than if the property is sold, triggering that penalty. Apparently that had been the intent. It appeared from the Senate Revenue Committee work sessions and hearings that had been the intent originally, but the language dealt with the property being sold as opposed to ceasing to be used solely for cemetery purposes. So it was essentially cleaning up as they wished it to be to invoke the penalty.
Okay.
Then in sections 6 through 8, it deals with the issue of filing a claim for exemption with the county assessor for property of daycare facilities, schools, academies, and student housing. And this makes this exemption consistent with the filing requirements for other exemptions. And again, provides the sworn statement as to how the property is being used. In section 9, it clears.
I represent you.
On page 3 of the bill, line 21, how do you pronounce the second word on that one?
Eleemosynary. That is synonymous with charitable.
That's a nice word. I've got to save that one.
I'm sorry, good.
Then in section 9, it clarifies the application deadline for property tax exemptions for properties that go to an exempt ownership or use between January 1 and June 30th. In sections 10 through 12, this is providing for a procedure for the assessors to get the names and addresses of people that are leasing property from courts or dock commissions and who must, as is in current law, make in-lieu payments to the school district or face full assessment on their property. This provides a procedure so that the dock commissions and courts that lease out property that's for the berthing of watercraft to notify the county assessor of the name and address of the lessee. There's no current provision in the statutes for that, and there have been instances where it has been difficult for the assessor, in fact, to get the names and addresses of individuals who would be leasing slips for mortgage of their recreational watercraft, for example. So this provides a provision then that the courts and dock commissions, who would be the lessors, would provide the names and addresses to the county assessor.
Gibson Hill.
Karen, is this issue discussed in any other bill floating around that you know of?
Chairperson Traher and Representative Hugo, House Bill 2245 did deal with the in-lieu payments in the sense that on recreational watercraft, for recreational watercraft, Senate Revenue Committee said that that would be the responsibility of the port or dock commission to make those payments for recreational watercraft that's leased to a taxable person. They received testimony that frequently it was such a small amount of in-lieu payment that administratively it was very difficult, and just to have the port pay that and then, of course, presumably pass that along to the lessee.
How does that relate to this provision?
There would be no conflict because that's dealing specifically with recreational watercraft. So we would have, if you have a grain elevator or this type of thing that's responsible, then it's leased out to a taxable entity and they're to make the in-lieu payments to the school district, then the port would be providing the names and addresses to the assessor, and that taxable entity would be making application with the county assessor for the appraisal and the in-lieu tax
computation. If 2245 were not to be passed into law, let's see, as I recall, 2245 primarily deals with
cargo
containers. And the senator from Pendleton amended it to deal with
Port of
Umatilla, is that what it was?
Yes.
So if that didn't pass, how would recreational slips be assessed in Umatilla? Any idea?
Chairperson Traher and Representative Hugo, they would be assessed the same way that they are currently, under current law.
By the county assessor.
307-120, correct.
Okay. How about that? Would that also apply to the Port of St. Helens?
Incidentally, if 2245 does go out first, we will need conflict amendments, but not in the sense that there's a real, that the two bills are trying to do different things, but they're just trying to amend the same section.
Yeah, I
wouldn't worry about that too much.
Right.
Great.
The Department of Revenue also wishes to propose the Dash 5 amendments, which you have, and these amendments offer a clear and workable definition for land. The amendment is needed because the current definition for land does not adequately address the items that make up land, and this is crucial for accurate assessment appraisals for market value. The issue has recently surfaced in court cases, and counties have followed proper appraisal procedures, including on-site development in the land valuation. However, courts have said that under the present statutes, the land should be viewed as bare naked land, excluding the factors that are associated with making it ready to be used as a site. And so the proposed amendments, your Dash 5 amendments in Section 3, would then be offering this definition for land.
Under this definition, Karen, talks about fill, grading, leveling, underground utilities and utility connections. Would septic tanks and those kinds of things be included in the land under
yes.
this definition?
Yes, Chairperson Traherne, yes. If by statute a total property value could be determined by the county assessor, then the requirement of the for land, a definition for land would not be so crucial, but there is this breakdown that is required between a land value and an improvement value. And that's why we need a workable definition for land to include all those elements that become intertwined in land when it's prepared to a site.
So this definition would say that the land would be the land and anything underneath it, basically. Any improvements that were then built on the land would be shown as an improvement value. Is that?
That is correct. I have, which I could offer to you, proposed amendments to our current rule, 150-307-010, which deals with land, and this would it offers some discussion on what we're talking about on the improvements to the land, which would be site improvements, as opposed to improvements on the land, which would be, as you said, building structures.
I think I'd like to have that.
Site developments are improvements to the land, including developer's overhead and profit. Do you do that now? Does the developer's overhead and profit accrue to the land?
Chairperson Traherne, Representative Hugo, yes, that would be a part of the market value, which, of course, the assessor is charged with estimating.
The state's been in business since 1859. We're now defining land.
By next session, we'll work on improvements.
Okay.
Did you have anything else, Ed?
No, sir.
Thank you. Don Marges. About the Dash 1 amendments. Why do we need the Dash 1 amendments?
Chairperson Traherne and Representative Hugo, I'm Don Marges, Chair of the State Child Care Commission. And right now, there is simply a glitch in the law, and this would correct that glitch. It's a very minor thing, but it would matter a great deal to an individual daycare center. Right now, tax-exempt centers that do charitable work with children, if they own their own property or if they rent from another nonprofit entity, are exempt from property taxes. But there's a glitch if they should happen to rent space from a business entity, a for-profit entity. And so we're simply asking for that glitch to be cleared up so that no daycare center would come up with a surprise tax bill that they didn't know was coming. And that would also be reflected in the rent that they would pay, as you can see in the part of the bill that's already there. Mr. Yates worked with the subcommittee of the commission on this, and frankly is probably much more of an expert at answering questions than I am.
Well, I do have one question, and that is, how come you spelled, what's the word? Different than the bill does.
I think that's the way it
There's two reasons the bill, there's only one in your amendments.
I love that word.